Chapter 16.
I should have known it was you, sighed Datar Ermion, rubbing the bony ridges where his temples used to be. If there's a problem with my plans, it's always safe to assume you're near the center of it.
I thought you were dead, stammered Jin, groping his way to his feet.
The Noctum answer was shaking and seemed unable to stand upright, as if his spine had been pulled from his body.
"I am dead, you yammering fool," said Datar, floating into the study. "Use your eyes. My head is a flaming skull, by the gods. I have made myself into a lich."
All necromancers courted death, but only the most potent among their number had ever approached the mastery required to make a return trip from the other side. When such wizards rose again as liches, they were free to pursue their dark craft unfettered by the frailties of a mortal body or the constraints of a sane mind. Gorm felt the bottom drop out of his stomach. He looked to Caitha. The color had drained from her face, and sweat was already beading on her brow. Necromancers were hard enough to kill the first time around. Liches were foes of legend. Jin tried to recover.
I meant that—
We all know what you meant, said the lich, looking around the study. But why wouldn't I let you think I was destroyed? You knew utterly nothing of my plans, and it only took you 20 years to come blundering in here and destroy half of my work. Imagine how quickly you could have ruined everything with a clue as to my whereabouts.
But stop stuttering, snapped Datar, and stand up straight. You look like a buffoon. If people must know that you're an Ermion, at least try not to embarrass the family name.
The wizard stood rigid upon command and collected himself enough to say,
What are you doing here?
I'm continuing my research, of course. I thought that was clear. The better question would be, what are you doing here? How did you find out about my plans?
Niln straightened, his face rigid with impetuous determination.
We serve as protectors of the people of light, vile necromancer!
The lich's skeletal grin seemed more of a smirk as he contemplated the high scribe.
People of light, vile necromancer, he asked, amusement plain in his hollow voice. Are we still hung up on branding people as good or evil? Why, little priest, you travel with a goblin. Surely you've seen the good in the barbaric shadowkin. And I'll tell you, I've found no greater example of the depravity of the world than the olive markets of Kesh. My work has nothing to do with your outmoded labels of morality. It's about research and progress.
We're here for the elven marbles, said Gorm,
trying to steer the conversation away from the grand conflict between light and darkness, or any conflict, really.
What? The orcish sculptures, said Datar. You came all this way for a few carved heads? I had hoped they had some traces of Stenish enchantments in them, but they're not even the least bit magical. Believe me, I've done the tests. They're just worthless stones.
Then you'll let us have the marbles? Asked Jin.
Oh, don't be stupid, said the lich. I can't have my research exposed prematurely. You'll all have to die. Though, if it's any consolation, I'll bring you all back to join my project.
Except the elf, he added, looking at Caitha. I'm afraid raising elves is technically impossible. Most inconvenient for us both, I assure you.
No, said Jin.
Oh, don't fuss about it, said Datar. Undeath is like so many things. It only seems horrible until you've tried it. Trust me, you'll hardly even miss having flesh.
You're an abomination, said the High Scribe.
Am I? I couldn't say, said Datar with a shrug. As I said, your labels are of no concern to me. Progress marches on, and you are but a bump in its path.
A casual wave of the lich's hand sent a burst of violet electricity arcing from his skeletal fingers towards Niln's heart. The priest looked shocked, and all the more so when a tiny green body knocked him from harm's way. Tibrin let out a garbled shriek as the spell struck him in the back.
No!
Shouted Gorm, already running across the room.
That was unexpected, said the lich, energy still arcing from his hand to the screaming goblin. But it doesn't matter what order I finish.
A lance of violet lightning struck Datar's skeletal hand, blasting it apart. The bones slowed to a halt in midair before drifting back into place and reforming the lich's hand, but his spell was already broken. Tibrin slumped to the floor. The pinpricks of light in Datar's eye sockets seemed to narrow as he glared at Jin.
So, he said, my son has finally learned to weave a half-competent spell.
Better than half, stuttered Jin. You don't get to...
A wall of nether energy washed over the Noctomancer. He barely erected a shield in time to prevent the flesh from melting off his bones. The lich stalked across the room.
If you are to fight, son, then fight. Don't make some foolish speech about...
Jin's blast of sorcery forced Datar to raise his own shield. An arrow from Caitha's bow bounced off it as well, followed closely by a dagger from Haraldin, which nearly made it through the lich's defenses. The lich prepared to retaliate, but had to dodge a sudden slash from Geist's broadsword.
So it is to be something of a fight after all, said Datar.
With one hand he erected a shield of violet flame around him, and with the other he flung bolts of black energy at the heroes. Gorm reached Tibrin's side and found Niln already checking the goblin for a pulse.
He's not long without healing, the priest told him.
Get him, Elixir, said Gorm. Keep him alive.
What will you do?
Me job, said Gorm.
In the seconds it took to ready his axe and shield, Gorm made a quick survey of the battlefield, which only confirmed his suspicions. The heroes were going to lose. Behind his shield of amethyst flame, Datar was impervious to anything the heroes could throw at him. His spare hand cast spells that wreaked havoc on the heroes running around him. The lich flung Geist against the eastern wall with a gust of enchanted wind. He conjured a series of bolts that struck at Caitha's feet, forcing her to dance away from the study's western hemisphere. An arc of lightning chased Haraldin to the spot where Geist had landed, and finally blasted the bard from his feet. Gorm froze. The lich was hurting them, guiding the heroes toward the leftmost point in the room. No, not toward anything, but away from something on the far side of the chamber, a large desk overflowing with scrolls and books.
Laruna! Gorm shouted. His research!
What?
Laruna screamed, narrowly dodging a blast of arcane energy.
The papers!
He pointed to the desk.
He's protecting his papers!
Understanding flashed on Laruna's face as Datar let out a cry of despair. She leveled a blast of white-hot flame that likely would have incinerated the papers, the desk, and the floor beneath it were it not for a shield of violet energy that suddenly crackled to life around the research.
"Do you have any idea what is in that desk?"
shrieked Datar.
"Nope," said Gorm, "and neither will anyone else if you drop that shield. It's more than 25 years of painstaking work." Then I wouldn't drop the shield, said Gorm.
Datar didn't drop the shield that protected the papers, nor did he lower his own defenses. Yet maintaining both defensive spells left the lich without a free hand to mount an effective offense. Laruna's relentless streams of fire aimed at the research, and the other heroes' combined assault denied him the opportunity to cast spells in retaliation.
It seems we're at an impasse, said Datar, deflecting a blow from Gorm's axe even as he dodged a strike from Haraldin at his back.
It's whoever's magic dries up first, said Gorm, and I'd not bet on Laruna running out.
You're a fool if you think I will let myself be destroyed before I let the research burn, said the lich, catching an arrow from Caitha in his shield.
But would you rather us die or flee with the research, said Gorm. You leave the stones, we don't burn the papers. In a way, everybody wins.
Or I kill you all and win in a much more satisfying way, said Datar. Come, Bone Reaper.
The terrifying howl rang out again, but it was much closer now. Something massive banged against the barricaded door.
Bone Reaper?
Asked Gorm.
Does that sound gauche? Asked Datar, deflecting a blow from Geist. It seems heavy-handed, but I need it to be instantly recognizable. And it's not like I have anyone else to bounce ideas off. Zombies are efficient shock troops, but they have no sense for this sort of thing.
What's a bone reaper?
The door shook on its hinges with the rhythmic pounding of a battering ram. "The name may not be elegant, Master Dwarf, but I feel it gets the point across sufficiently," said the Lich. "All you really need to know is that my sorcery can hold out against your attacks far longer than your barricade can hold against the Bone Reaper. Or you can, for that matter. I'm afraid this is the end for your little—" A new voice roared behind the door, a bellow deeper and more gravelly than that of Datar's Bone Reaper. "What was that?" asked Datar. The door began to shake again, but rather than the slow thudding of a siege, it sounded like a frantic battle was raging outside. The Bone Reaper's howl rose in pitch and intensity, and then cut off in a series of loud, grisly thuds. Datar seemed perplexed. "Is there another—" The shrieking resumed with a mad scrabbling at the door. A great tusk, thick with black blood, punched through the doorway, only to be hauled back a moment later. Silhouettes of struggling titans locked in mortal combat flashed through the hole, and then the melee could clearly be heard descending the stairs and spilling into the ballroom below. With another shriek, the Bone Reaper fell silent once more. Datar paused for a moment. "What in the hells would—" The Bone Reaper howled again, and a brief struggle erupted beneath them. A few bone-crunching thuds rang out before the howl faded. Heroes and Lich alike waited in silence. "Well, I built the thing to be resilient," said Datar eventually, "but this is getting—" Another chilling shriek rang out below, along with the crash of shattering glass. Screams and bellows echoed through the pine forest as the unseen combatants fell from the tower and struck the ground below. Sounds of battle rang out again, although slower and less vigorous, and then a sickening snap prompted a final charnel wail from the Bone Reaper. Silence descended once more. Datar looked around. "Is that it? Do we think this is done? Yes?" The Lich backed over to the enchanted doorway in the wall and stared down into the tower's courtyard. "By the gods, how did you manage to get a tr—" But Gorm had seen the Lich's surprise coming, and he took it as the only opening he was going to get. Launching into the air, into the amethyst flames of Datara's shield, he swung his axe in a desperate strike that, against all odds, connected. Datar's head bounced on the floorboards. "Oh, flaming ashes, not again," said the Lich. His hand slapped the air where his forehead had been moments ago. "Do you know what a pain it is to align that properly? If it's a fraction of an inch off, I can't walk in a straight line." "Won't be a problem for long," said Gorm, lunging for the skull. He swung his axe for the killing blow, but the Lich's skull flitted away like a flaming gnat. "Very well. Keep your burial stones, or elven marbles, or whatever you call them," said Datar's head, hovering above the heroes. The Lich's body clenched its fist and gestured firmly, and the entire desk of research lifted unsteadily into the air and bobbed toward the doorway in the wall. "Should we meet again, I won't underestimate your strength. I should endeavor to avoid such an encounter, were I you. Jin, stop slouching. You look like a peasant." With that parting admonition, the Lich, his research, and his head glided out the door and into the air. Gorm rushed to the doorway and watched Datar's aerial retreat. The Lich descended to hover above a mob of shambling corpses and skeletal warriors as they shuffled dutifully to the north. As Gorm watched, the last zombie in the group stopped at the tree line and tipped a large top hat to the tower before disappearing into the forest. "We did it," said Gorm, awe and relief washing over him. They'd beat back a Lich, and with a party that had been shamed by a lowly Skarg just weeks before. It was an achievement bards would be singing about for years to come. His elation subsided as he was reminded of the subject of some other popular ballads. He turned back to the study. The other heroes were all wounded, weary, and staring at Jin with varying degrees of shock and confusion.
I can explain this," said the Noctomancer, his expression that of a hunted animal.
"And you will," said Gorm, unable to keep the menace from his voice, "at great length. But not until we're well on our way. Everybody, take salve as you need it, and then load up all the treasure you can carry."
Jin tried to protest.
I really do think I should. If I were ye, I wouldn't be in any rush to have me find out how much ye've been holding out on us, barked Gorm. Geist, help me get the elven marbles. This quest is almost done, and good bloody riddance.
What will you do when it is over?
Thane asked, sitting amid the ferns and needles that carpeted the pine forest floor.
I ain't sure. It depends, said Gorm. Hold still.
Gorm knew of little that could inflict lasting harm on a troll, but he was forced to add the Bone Reaper to the list. Tusks and shards of bone protruded from Thane's back and shoulders. Gorm grabbed a great tusk jutting from the troll's shoulder and wrenched it free, with some difficulty because the troll's flesh had regenerated around it. A gout of thick black blood poured out after the tusk, stopping when the puncture wound closed and healed. Seconds later, hair sprouted from the new skin, and within moments there was no sign there had ever been a wound.
What does it depend on?
Well, a lot of it depends on how the public sees us. Image and all that. It's the third biggest part of heroics, after the killing and the looting. This quest was supposed to get us back on the guild's good side, but now, who knows? We've been traveling with the bloody Ermion boy the whole time.
Ah, yes. The wizard.
Hark!
The troll grimaced as Gorm ripped a claw from its lower back.
Where is he now?
Skulking in his tent, I'd imagine.
What did you think of his side of the, ooh, story?
I ain't got the stomach to hear it. Not yet, anyway. This one'll hurt.
Thane growled something unintelligible as Gorm ripped a jagged bone from his back.
Besides, I already know what he'll say. That he didn't know, that he left that life behind, that he was scared that
that you'd shun him and leave him to skulk in his tent?
The troll spoke softly, with notes of melancholy among the gravel of his voice.
I can understand the fear.
I'm sure you can, but now you see the problem too, aye? Secrets come out, and they damage the party. Trust is broken, and there may not be time to recover from the surprise. Another big tusk here. Some risks are worth taking.
Gorm shook his head.
You don't keep secrets from the party.
Don't tell me you're reconsidering our arrangement.
Desperation twanged in the troll's voice.
It's worked out well so far, hasn't it? I mean, I know I slipped up with the orcs, but I killed this bone monster.
Gorm shook his head. And I'm grateful, but that's beside the point.
I'd never let any harm come to her, to any of you, and if anything threatens you, this agreement ye and I have is the threat, lad.
Secrets hurt. Look at the Noctomancer.
Yes, look at him. None of you will give him more than dirty looks. The woman mage won't even look in his direction. And from what I can see, he's just a human with a bad childhood. What will they do to a troll?
A bad childhood? Tatar Ermion was a necromancer, now a lich. He's the son of a monster.
So am I.
The troll jerked to attention, looking back toward the hero's camp.
Did you hear that?
A voice rang out, soft and musical, calling for Gorm.
She's coming!
The troll seemed on the verge of panic.
She'll come, and do not tell her, Master Dwarf. Please, I beg you, do not tell her.
All right, quiet, hissed Gorm. I ain't decided anything yet. I just have to think about it.
Very well,
Thane conceded.
I will wait on your decision.
The troll's shoulders slumped, and then continued sliding as the troll transformed into a pile of mossy granite. Thane had barely settled into place when Caitha stepped into the small clearing. Gorm threw himself atop the troll-turned stones and attempted to look casual. It didn't work. Dwarves never look casual, especially not when they want to.
There you are, said the elf. Niln wishes to speak with you tonight.
He jumped back to his feet.
Why, is it Tibbidon?
The goblin's wounds had healed with the first drops of salve, but he had yet to regain consciousness.
No, Tibbidon hasn't changed.
Ah, well, thank you. I'll talk to the scribe before bed. Let's get back to camp.
Just a few weeks ago, we were on Andoran's pinnacle, commiserating about how we'd been dragged into this Almatrin business, said Caitha.
Gorm cringed as she sat down atop Thane.
And now? Now we've raided a lich's tower. We're going to expose the return of Dattar Ermion. We recovered the elven marbles.
We aren't done yet, he said. We should probably be at the camp guarding them.
The ranger looked up at the sky beyond the treetops, painted a lurid orange by the dwindling sun.
Well, yes, there's more to go, but this is big, Gorm. This isn't just a fetch quest anymore. This is breakout career-type adventure.
Aye.
Gorm couldn't decide whether it was better to stand or sit. He opted for setting one boot atop a rock, and then nearly fell over when the stones shifted uncomfortably.
"I mean, Leary will probably want me back," said Katha. "And then I'll tell that fat hack where to stuff his offer, because he'll be in line behind 10 better agents."
Gorm allowed himself a small smile.
"Aye?
You could be the Pyrebeard once more."
"Let's not get ahead of ourselves, Katha." Gorm shot her a wink. "Or should I say, Jade Wind?"
"I could get used to that. Again."
The ranger wore a wide grin.
"You've earned it. You really turned the quest around."
"I had help," said Katha softly. "It's been good, not drinking. Helpful. I feel like I used to. Or at least like I think I did. So, thank you for that."
"'Twasn't anything. Ye did it."
Katha nodded and looked back to the treetops.
"What do you think killed the Bone Reaper?"
Gorm slipped and nearly fell off the stones again.
I thought maybe Datar lost control of it on account of being so distracted. It could have been fighting the other undead."
"That's what Laruna said," said Katha, "and Heraldin thought there could have been two of them and one destroyed the other. But I think it was the king in the wood."
"Oh," said Gorm.
He tried to keep his eyes away from Thane and simultaneously maintain an air of indifference, but he didn't manage to do either. Fortunately, Katha's attention was elsewhere.
"I keep finding the tracks of monsters that should have found us, but instead turned tail and ran. We haven't encountered a single foe since the Mirewood, save for the orcs, and they weren't really hostile."
The rocks beneath his feet twitched in a manner not unlike a knowing elbow to the arm. Gorm grimaced down at the rocky outcropping, which looked as smug as a pile of granite could.
"Aye, but it's best not to turn up your nose at good fortune, right?"
"It's more than good fortune. I see shadows within shadows, movements from the corner of my eye. I've seen something, someone, out there, through the trees, but he only moves when he believes I don't see him, and I can never get a good look."
"Well, the forest can play tricks."
"Oh, tell me about the forest, Sir Dwarf," laughed the ranger. "I know what I see. I know what I sense. I feel the same spirit that I felt in the Mirewood."
She leaned back into a comfortable recess in the stone.
"He is here. Either that, or I'm touched by the All-Mother after all."
"Or maybe both,"
muttered Gorm. He didn't know if it was stranger that a troll was smitten with an elf, or that she seemed to be just as lovelorn.
"Come on, let's get back to camp."
"You go on ahead," Katha told him. "I'm going to rest here for a while."
"Oh, I couldn't leave you alone in the woods. Whoop!"
Gorm nearly fell on his face as the stone beneath his feet shifted and jostled.
"Watch your step," said Katha. "And don't worry about me. I'm not alone, remember?"
"Or maybe you're just crazy," muttered Gorm.
Yet Thane didn't seem to want Gorm to stay, and the elf was clearly comfortable, so he bade her goodbye and headed back to camp. Katha smiled as she watched Gorm trundle off through the pines in the last of the day's fading light. Beneath his curmudgeonly facade was, well, yes, a genuine curmudgeon, but a curmudgeon who clearly cared for her. A famous heroine would see multitudes of agents and groupies and would-be lovers come and go over a career, but true friends, friends who offered as much help and support as they needed, were rarer and more precious than any loot, even the persistently grouchy ones. It made her feel all the worse for deceiving Gorm.
"I meant it," she told the forest after the dwarf was well out of earshot. "I know you're out there."
That much had been the truth. Sometimes she would speak to the watcher in the forest, and she would swear she heard answers whispered on the wind. She could feel the presence from the Mirewood as surely as she felt her own heartbeat, just not as pressingly as she felt the itch in her wrists. She slipped the elixir and the hunting knife from her belt pouch. The idea of the King of the Wood made her want to be a better person, but if he was anything more than an idea, he was content not to show it. Every night that she spent imploring him to show himself, the vials in her pack implored her to come and float away on streams of blood and elixir. The man and the bottle, her ideal and her obsession, were pulling her in opposite directions. But only one of them had decided to show up tonight.
"It won't be often," she told herself as she slipped off her bracers.
Just a dose now and then. She could spread them out. Maybe stop altogether someday. Some distant day, to be more specific.
"For once I hope you're not there," she whispered to the woods.
She must have cut deeper than she thought. The very rocks beneath her seemed to jerk as the knife bit into her wrist. She let the blood pour down her hand and onto the stone for as long as she could stand. and then eagerly sucked the elixir from the bottle and drifted away on a cloud of dreams. Gorm found Niln in his tent, still at the side of Tibrin's cot, washing the sleeping goblin's face with a cool cloth. The patient's breathing was slow and regular, his eyes sunken in their gigantic sockets.
"Any change?" Gorm asked.
"Not yet. But don't worry, he will awaken," Niln said. He dunked his cloth into a bowl of cool water and pressed it to the goblin's head again. "He just needs time to fight off the corruption. Dark magic bites deeper than flesh."
"You've seen this before, then?"
"Several times," said Niln. "I worked with the temple healers during my days as an acolyte, and I know the malady. Tibrin will be fine."
"Good." Gorm sat down on a stump next to the goblin. "Katha said you wanted to see me?"
"I wished to ask whom you planned to give the elven marbles to," said Niln.
It caught Gorm completely off guard.
I didn't. I'd assumed you'd decided the elves," he told Niln.
"I had," said Niln, "and now I would not be so sure. But in truth, it isn't my decision. The other heroes follow you, Gorm. They tolerate me, insofar as it benefits them. If you and I disagree where to take the marbles, I have no doubts as to who they'll side with."
"But we won't disagree," Gorm protested. "How could we? The king gave ye the power, and I don't have an opinion."
"Then you must find one. The mantle of leadership is like destiny, Mr. Ingerson. It chooses whom it will, regardless of the wishes of kings or men, and you cannot give it away should you be chosen."
The high scribe gave a resigned sigh.
"No more than you can seize it for your own should you be passed over."
"Don't go blaming destiny again. You're passing leadership off to me right now."
"Am I?"
The high scribe's smile was small and waning.
"Have I led up until now? Is the party looking to me for wisdom? Am I letting them down?"
Gorm thought about it.
"No,"
he admitted eventually.
"I wish I was wrong in this," said Niln, "but you and I both know otherwise. I have many things to decide before we reach Andoran, but the fate of the elven marbles is not one of them."
"Aye,"
said Gorm. His mind was racing. He'd sworn to carefully consider who should have the elven marbles, but he'd made those promises secure in the knowledge that his opinion didn't matter.
I'll think on it."
"Good."
Niln took the cold cloth from Tibrin's brow and replaced it with a fresh one.
"I've heard you plan to interrogate Jin about his past."
"Once I can bring myself to look at him," said Gorm, "and do it without breaking his teeth."
"Let me save you the trouble. I'll provide you with a dossier on Jin Ermion's history."
Gorm leaped up so fast he nearly jostled Tibrin off his cot.
"You knew? And you kept it secret from the party?"
"Secrecy was exactly why Jin joined our party. You weren't the only hero who was brought into our company under duress, if you'll recall."
"So you blackmailed him, just like you blackmailed me."
"No, Mr. Ingerson, it's very different. You were a criminal with a respectable past. Jin was the opposite. You gave up a life on the highway for a chance at redemption. He was forced to give up his redeemed life to join the guild that killed his father. I have never felt a shred of guilt, not even a moment of hesitation, for the manner in which you had to be recruited. But for Jin? Yes, I regret that."
Niln gazed through Gorm, staring at something that only he could see.
"I told myself it had to be done, but then I did it for the sake of many things that did not come to pass. If you must be angry at someone for the secrecy, let it be me."
Niln stood.
"Forgive Jin. The questions he faces tonight will be penance enough for him."
"No," said Gorm. "No, you talked me out of it. I'll spare him my questions. Reading his file will be enough."
Niln stopped in the tent's doorway.
"I'm glad, Mr. Ingerson, but I wasn't referring to your questions."
Laruna's knuckles were white as her fists reflexively clenched and unclenched. Her arms were crossed over her chest so tightly that they ached, straining against the fury that she was barely containing.
"I'm here," her words scraped out between grinding teeth. "What do you want?"
"I feel like I owe you an explanation," Jin said. He looked small and frail, like a frightened animal in the middle of the clearing he'd led her to.
Well, that fit the story.
"There's no need. I've heard the ballads."
"Oh, we've all heard the ballads." The Noctomancer's lips twisted, as though he tasted the bitterness in his words. "They don't tell the whole story."
"You kidnapped a princess. You tried to force her to marry you," said Laruna. "I'd say that's enough to know."
We didn't kidnap. Argh! He stopped and collected himself. All right. Look, believe what you will about father. I was a boy, Laruna, not yet 10 years old. What makes you think I'd want to marry anyone? Father told me I was to be married and that he had found a princess for me, and I was to be a prince. Laruna faltered. Well, maybe you could have reasoned I'd been on half rations for 2 years because I kept failing in my studies. I hadn't spoken to a soul outside of that tower for even longer than that. And then Father was telling me I could have a new life in a new castle. He said he'd be proud of me. Even if I could have seen a reason to tell him no, and even if I wasn't scared to death of the man, I wouldn't have refused him. And yes, I was at the wedding. I won't deny it. But Marja thought even less of me than Father did. So when Johan came, I took my chance and ran away. Can you say you would have done any different?
I don't know, said Laruna. It's a sad story, and if it's true, I'm very sorry for you.
Please, believe me. Why would I lie to you?
That's my question!
She screamed. Her resolve cracked as reservoirs of pain and fury overflowed.
Have you ever felt alone? I asked. Do you know what it's like to feel stupid? I said. No, not Jin.
Laruna, I... The dam had burst. Her rage was rushing out now, and a simple protest would not stop it. Laruna could feel wisps of flame writhing around her fists.
I poured out my heart to you. I told you my secrets, secrets the Academy doesn't know. And all I got was this stone wall, this facade you show everyone else.
I'm sorry, said Jin. I really am. Of course I've felt that way, but there are men who would see me dead just for my heritage. The most popular ballads in the land feature me as a fool. There are drinking songs about how I wet myself on my wedding day.
What?
I believe it's called Cold Feet, Warm Pants. They say it's very catchy. I spent 2 decades building a new life separate from my past. I can't go around sharing my story with just anybody who tells me theirs. The words shocked her for a moment, but the shock was quickly vaporized by white-hot wrath. She saw the flash of fear in Jin's eyes, saw him quickly raise an intricate magical shield. But she was not the apprentice she had been, and though the Noctomancer's weaves were far more complex than Laruna could hope to create, she knew enough to destroy them. A quick burst of fire bored through his barrier and blew it apart, leaving him open and defenseless. As the remnants of his shield burned away, she slapped him so hard he almost fell.
"You weren't just anybody to me," she sobbed, "and you made me think I wasn't just anybody to you."
He stared at her with piercing blue eyes, ignoring the red welt rising on his cheek.
"You're not just... You're very special to me. If you forgive me, I can show you that."
"Can you?" she said. "Can you tell me there are no more secrets? Can you say that I know you as well as you know me?"
He winced at her question, but recovered quickly. Some of his old self returned as he straightened, and he gave her a small, brave smile.
"Could you believe me if I did?" he asked.
They both knew the answer, and so they both walked away. The sun had long set before the elf stood again, wobbling and giddy. She cleaned her hands and wrists with an old rag before she fumbled her bracers into place. The warm glow of the distant campfire guided her as she staggered back to camp, leaving behind a blood-spattered pile of rocks that waited until she was well out of earshot before transforming into a blood-spattered troll. A tear ran down Thane's face as he watched her go. He looked around the clearing, as though dazed, and his eyes locked upon something that gleamed in the faint moonlight. He picked up the small empty vial etched with an ornate spiral pattern. He considered the bottle sitting in his palm, a tiny drop of glowing amber swirling around its base. And the longer he considered the bottle, the more ragged his breath became, and the more his face hardened into a determined grimace. His hand closed around the bottle. With a trembling fist, Thane slowly, deliberately ground the vial into crystalline dust. One by one, the heroes shuffled off to their tents for the night. The moon rose high above the pine tops, washing the forest in pale azure. The fire died to a few glowing embers that sparked in the cool night. Gorm remained by Tibrin's side, lost in thought. Of course he should give the elven marbles to the elves. It had been all but a foregone conclusion a few days ago. The gratitude of House Tyriath could prove invaluable to Gorm's professional comeback, and their spite could be damaging in equal measure. If he thought at all about his career, there wasn't really even a choice. Besides, there was a long tradition of looting for all the races of man. Orc fortresses had been built with plunder from elven cities. In the old days, powerful orcs had worn necklaces of elven teeth and ears to prove their might. Likewise, the elves took the marbles, or the burial stones, or whatever they were, and carted them off to display them as a source of national pride. That was how everything had always worked. Loot was the prize. The goal was to take it, and the elves won. It wasn't fair for Shadowkin to fault the elves for playing the game just because the orcs lost. Bert's tiny canine voice rang out in Gorm's memory.
Shadowkin never win, Lightling. We can't win.
Gorm remembered the orcs of the Gazvarda tribe, toiling every day for the dream of a life that he had taken for granted. The return of their sacred burial stones would be more than a gift to Bloodroot. They would be a beacon of hope for Shadowkin everywhere. The smart thing to do wasn't the right thing to do. If he did the right thing, he'd probably be laughed right back into the gutter, and there'd be no returning to the glory days. If he played it smart, he could have his old career back, but he'd never be the same dwarf he was 20 years ago.
"I guess you really can't go back," he whispered to himself.
"Gorm Ingerson?"
said a weak voice.
"I'm here,"
said Gorm, relief washing over him. The goblin tried to push himself to his elbows.
"Grot? What?"
Nay, lie down. Nilin is fine. He's good, see? Sleeping in his tent. Sleep, aye?"
Gorm pantomimed a person sleeping, unsure how much Imperial the goblin had actually picked up. Tibrin nodded with an awkward,
"Aye,"
and fell back on his cot.
"You saved the High Scribe again," Gorm told his bedridden squire. "And all of us, really. If Nilin died, we'd all be for the hangman's noose."
Tibrin managed a wan smile.
"Gorm Ingerson, friend."
"Aye, we're fast friends," said Gorm.
And he knew then that he'd always known, deep in his bones, what he was going to do with the elven marbles. It just took the friendship of a goblin for him to accept it.
"Gorm Ingerson?"
"Aye."
"Hangry?"
The goblin pointed a spindly claw at his open mouth.
"Aye, of course you are," laughed Gorm. "Never change, lad."